This is our final lesson in the book of Ruth, attaining financial ability. We're just looking at various verses throughout Ruth, the book of Ruth, chapters 1 through 4. We live in the latter days of church history, as seen in the exponential growth of sin in society. The concern then can arise as to how godly believers might obtain godly marital partners in our era. The courtship of godly Boaz and Ruth occurred in the apostate era of the Judges, according to Ruth 1:1. So we study the book of Ruth on godly courtship for our era, noting in this lesson the value of attaining financial ability. In one survey, it was discovered that young husbands attributed 48% of their most serious marital problems to financial difficulties. That's interesting. One court judge has reported, quote, quarreling about money is a major cause for America's unprecedented divorce rates. Now, I got this out of a book that was written back in 1968, and of course, divorce is something that's only continued. And when I first saw these notes, I was kind of surprised. I thought, you know, with marital couples, especially young marital couples, there may be other situations, compatibility, whatnot, but money was a big, big issue. So it's important to study how Boaz and Ruth attained financial ability for marriage. And that's what our study is. Boaz attained financial ability for his marriage to Ruth. And we're going to be looking at various passages on that. Now, the Mosaic Covenant in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 and verses 11 and 12, promised that if the people of Israel obeyed the law, God would bless them with bounty in their agricultural production and their monetary gain. In fact, they would be loaning to many nations, and no one, they wouldn't be borrowing from anybody. That would be the blessing of God. So when Israel faced a famine for her sins, and we know that the famine under the law was due to sin according to Deuteronomy 28:15 and 23-24, instead of faithlessly leaving Israel to sojourn in a Gentile land like Elimelech did, in Ruth 1 and 2, 1 verses 1 and 2, Boaz stayed in Israel, relying on God. We get this by implication. In verses 1 and 2, there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. If you go to chapter 2, verse 1, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Boaz had stayed put. And because he stayed put, and had trusted the Lord blessed him. And we'll see in a little bit why. When Israel, Boaz may have farmed Elimelech's land during the famine. We know this because in 2 Kings chapter 8, verses 1 through 6, when Elisha had directed the Shunammite woman to sojourn in the Gentile land due to a famine in Israel, someone else had farmed her land. And the king later ordered that the produce of her land during her absence from Israel be restored to her. He ordered that in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 6. So apparently when someone left their land, others, maybe relatives and so forth, would go ahead and farm that land so that it wouldn't lie fallow, and they would help it out. So God may have given godly Boaz opportunity to do quite well even in the famine. It's interesting. When the Great Depression occurred and the stock market went way down, you know what the wealthy people were doing? They were buying stocks. Loads and loads of stocks, based pennies on the dollar. When the market gradually went back up, they were far more wealthy. Warren Buffett does this. He had, the last I'd heard, of course, before he pulled out of his venture, his business, he held $140 billion, I think, in his pocketbook over here, so that whenever the market would go down, he'd throw a bunch of money at it. And he did that for a couple of reasons. He did it to for his own growth, although he gave a lot of the money away, but he did it in order to help other companies. He didn't want a lot of these companies to go under, and so a lot of these companies, they looked for him rather than the government for a bailout, and he would go ahead and buy stocks, and he'd still make money off of it. But it's interesting, the Lord went ahead and blessed Boaz in the midst of all of this. After the famine, Boaz was known to be wealthy. That's what we just read in Ruth 2:1. This wealth is evident in his use of young men to labor in his harvest and his use of maids to help as support for the harvesters. I don't know if you picked that up. In Ruth chapter 2, verses 4 through 7, behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you, and they answered him, the Lord bless thee. So he had male reapers, and then he had female reapers too. In verse 21 of Ruth chapter 2, Ruth the Moabitess, he said, and to me also you shall keep fast by my young men until they've ended all my harvest. And in verse 23, so she kept fast or close by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So apparently he had maids out there, young women who were responsible as a support group, maybe getting the meal ready for the lunch meal and whatever for the male harvesters who were working. So it was quite an operation. And this wealth is evident. In Boaz's use of both young men to labor in his harvest and his use of maids to help as support for the harvesters. These young men probably were hired. They were young, and they could work, you know, long hours, 12, 13 hours a day or whatever. Because when you have to harvest, I've been around farmers, and when they harvest, they need it all harvested now. Because the grain, you want the grain at about 20% moisture. You don't want less than that, because then you don't make more money. If you have more than 20%, the corn especially will rot if you put it in the silo. So when everything gets to 20%, you want it all in now, ideally. Now, that's not realistic. That's not what happens. So it takes a while to get it. But they would have been hardworking young men. Also, Boaz was financially able to have his harvesters leave large portions of grain for Ruth to glean for her and her mother-in-law's financial livelihoods through the barley and the wheat harvests. And Ruth chapter 2, verse 14, and Boaz said to her at mealtime, you come here and eat of the bread and so forth. And verse 15, when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. Now the sheaves are what the young men had collected and tied together. And reproach her not. And let also fall some of the handfuls on purpose for her. Leave them, that she may glean them. Do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, beat out what she had gleaned. It was about an ephah of barley, or about 20 quarts of barley, which is a huge amount. And she continued all the way until, and notice verse 23 of chapter 2, she gleaned to the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest. Barley harvest goes from sort of the middle to the end of April. It goes through and peaks in May, and then after the barley harvest comes the wheat harvest. It goes into June. So you got a couple of months there. And so he's essentially letting her have a large take for her welfare. So he was a fairly wealthy man. He could afford to do that. Also, Boaz was then financially able to promise in God's name and to fulfill that promise to marry Ruth, to buy Elimelech's land, and to provide for the livelihood of Ruth's mother-in-law. Now, what this required is not only for his buying the property and supporting Ruth and her mother-in-law, but when Ruth had a son through him, that son would inherit that land, not his son, not his other son. So his other son had to have property. So he was a fairly wealthy man to do this, be able to do this. But in Ruth 3, verses 12 and 13, Boaz was talking to Ruth, and now it is true that I am your near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman who is nearer than I am. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto you the part of a kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to you, then I will do the part of a kinsman. In other words, he's offering to marry her and care for her. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. She was swearing by the name of the Lord, taking an oath in the Lord's name. And that's exactly what he did. And Ruth chapter 4, 1 to 13. He went to the elders of the city of Bethlehem, and the other kinsman redeemer was not able to. He could purchase the land, but he couldn't raise up a seed through Ruth. He couldn't have Ruth as well because it would harm his own inheritance to his own son. So he told Boaz, you take it. And Boaz said, oh, yeah, I'll take it. And he took and he bought the land, and he married Ruth. And also he took care of Naomi for the rest of Naomi's life as well, which is a wonderful thing. Then though Ruth could not be the chief breadwinner in a marriage, Ruth exhibited financial ability in her actions, which showed Boaz that she would be financially beneficial as a wife. Ruth exhibited a good work ethic by initiating the request to her mother-in-law Naomi on gleaning for food and grain to trade for their livelihood needs. In Ruth chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. And gleaning would have been some tough work. The women, the widows and so forth, would have to go out into the field and under the sun, and they'd be leaning over and walking, bending over all day long, picking up the grain. But Ruth the Moabite has said unto Naomi, this is chapter 2, verse 2, let me now go to the field and glean ears of grain, literally, after him in whose sight I shall find favor. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And so she went. So she had a good work ethic. Also, when Ruth selected the field that she would glean, she chose one where there were several male harvesters and several maids working as a support team for the harvesters. The presence of such a group indicated financial acumen in the farmer, for such a large operation meant that he likely raised a good crop for gleaning, and the presence of both men and women in the field provided a greater margin of safety for Ruth in a dangerous era than what she could get in a poorer man's or poorer farmer's field with fewer workers. There could be, there'd be a farmer who was so poor that he himself had to do the whole work. Well, with a group of people, both men and women there, it was a wise choice on Ruth's part. And then that meant the farmer also was fairly wealthy. And if he's fairly wealthy, he probably knew what he was doing in raising grain. So it was going to be a good crop that she would get to glean there. So she was using her head and thinking. Ruth also gained permission to glean from Boaz's four men. And she spent a large amount of time working in comparison to other women who gleaned there, indicating a superior work ethic. In chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said to Boaz, this is the Moabitish damsel that came back from Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I request of you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued even from the morning until now, except she tarried just a little while in the house. They would have a house, apparently a shelter from the sun. And apparently by the implication here is the other women who were out gleaning would spend a little more time. But Ruth just took a minor break, and then she was out working. So the headman, the foreman, was amazed at her work ethic. Even when Boaz had invited Ruth to eat the noon meal with the reapers, and he had handed her parched grain for the meal, Ruth ate but left to return to her gleaning even before the harvesters had returned to their work. Notice verse 14 of chapter 2. Boaz said unto her at the mealtime, come here, and eat of the bread, and dip your morsel into the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched grain, and she did eat and was fulfilled and left. Notice she left, and the workers are still there. They're still eating. Verse 15, and when she had risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean, and so forth. So she wasn't wasting too much time to eat. She ate what she needed, but she was right back out working because she had a livelihood to take care of, not only for herself, but for her mother-in-law. So this gal was demonstrating tremendous work ethic. And, of course, such devotion to her work for a livelihood impressed Boaz. So he helped her by directing his reapers to give Ruth additional amounts of grain. That's when he offered to, told the men to give her extra amounts of grain. He saw how hard she was working out there in the sun. So he said, all right, she really needs this. So you're going to give her an extra amount. Now, even when Ruth approached Boaz in her night rendezvous with him to ask him to perform the role of her kinsman redeemer, Ruth followed her mother-in-law's advice about taking the initiative as politely as she could for the livelihood of her and her mother-in-law. Boaz was thus impressed by the fact that though Ruth was polite, she still took the initiative in seeking financial security, revealing her drive for financial success. So he promised her that she would obtain that financial security. You can see that Ruth was leaving an impression with Boaz, and she wasn't trying to, she wasn't thinking about him marrying her or anything. I think at this particular time, she might not have even known about the Kinsman Redeemer law. She was just out there working. But she was had such a good ethic, and she was self-disciplined. She was working hard. Boaz recognized this young woman would make a good wife anyway. So Boaz and Ruth each individually obeyed the Lord and were each individually industrious in obtaining God's financial blessing and financial ability for marriage before they were married. So may believers who desire to get married financially prepare for marriage to be able to get married. There's an illustration I want to give you. There was a young woman, wasn't married, been in our church. She had gone away from home for a while and worked, and then decided to come back home and really didn't have that much going for her. In fact, she was kind of discouraged when she came back. Her car was quite aged, and she said, "It's just like I'm starting over again." And she got a job, and she was somewhat discouraged as to where the job was and everything. There were a lot of down things, but she thought, you know, I really want to believe, I believe God wants me to be married. I'm on a plan for it, so I'm going to start saving my money. And so she did. Her parents allowed her to live in the home. She didn't have to pay for room and everything or board. And she just saved and saved and saved and saved and saved money. Well, eventually the Lord led her to get married, a Christian man and so forth. Well, she had saved up quite a sum of money. So, and this is a true story. And the sum is large enough, they were able to use it for a sizable down payment on a house. And since then, and they're still a fairly young family, the house has been paid off. And so now they're able to double up their money towards retirement, which is quite a ways down the road. I think that's a really smart thing to do. If you're not married yet, and yet you believe that the Lord wants you to go in that direction, it would be wise to do what you can to prepare for it, even financially. You'll never regret it. And you can invest and so forth. In fact, I hear Dave Ramsey on the radio one time. He was talking. There was a guy who was 20 years of age, and he was thinking about getting some money in a Roth IRA. A Roth IRA is something that grows. That you put the money into the IRA after individual retirement account after you've paid taxes. So it grows and grows and grows. When you start pulling money out, there are no taxes on it. And he wanted to put $10,000. He says, "Man, this rocks." He told the young man, "This is a great idea." He says, "If you can get $10,000 in there, you're 20 years of age. When you turn 65, you're going to be a multimillionaire or a millionaire at least, and no taxes on it." And Dave says, "That rocks," you know, and because he was taking care of himself and he was thinking, even in his 20s. So I think, you know, this is just a practical thing. There are so many people now, I think it's like 40% or 45% of the American people are living hand to mouth. And it's really hard. So it would be helpful for people to think about this. Both Ruth and Boaz were industrious this way, and the Lord blessed them, and I'm sure they had a good marriage. But I think they were both taken care of.